Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Welcome back to another episode. Taking a look at our third and final candidate in the Republican primary in Iowa's Senate District 1. The primary is coming up on June 5th. We've already had a chance to talk to Zach Whiting, Brad Price, and I had a conversation yesterday with Jesse Wolf. Jesse is the Palo Alto committee, GOP committee chair. He's a businessman in Emmitsburg, and he joined us by phone yesterday to talk about his campaign. But before we get to that conversation, first, a word from our sponsors.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a life insurance plan that makes sense for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. That's Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
We are back. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Jesse Wolf, a Republican candidate in Iowa Senate District 1. Hey, Jesse, welcome to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to our listeners about your campaign and your views on different issues facing Iowans. And so welcome and thanks again. Happy to have you on.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate this opportunity and look forward to answering questions for your listeners.
Good deal. So first question I always ask any candidate that I talk to, regardless of race or is this, why, what is prompting you to want to run for office?
That's a good question. The Republican family, the Republican Party is like family to me. I've been a Republican from my early 20s. Ronald Reagan brought me into the fold then. I found that my value system aligned with conservatism and personal responsibility and duty to God and country. I'm an all-in for America kind of guy. This is my country, right or wrong. As I see it, America is mostly right. We free people from oppression, not oppressed people. I've known Senator David Johnson for many years, and I was surprised when he decided to leave the party and the Republican family. That is one of the issues, that abandonment of the family, of the party here in the first district, that initially pushed me to consider running for that. I'm proud to be a Republican. I feel that the values that my party reflect bring out the best in America and the best in Iowa. The first district is God's country to me. Mm-hmm. I believe that I'm the best choice for that seat in District 1 to restore effective representation, civility, dignity, and sanity to the office of senator.
Okay, so let me follow up question here, since you're talking about Republican Party as a family. A lot of families are dysfunctional.
Yeah.
How do you handle dysfunction within the Republican Party? Well, go for it.
Absolutely. I mean, all families have a squabble, and you don't agree on things, and you know, sometimes you just have a knockdown, drag out fight kind of thing, you know, verbally with this. And the Republican Party is no different. The difference is you don't walk out on family. And so you have to look at the facts, what's there, ask the cool heads prevail, and that we do what's right for the people who put us in the office, to attend to the needs of the state and the needs of the constituents, and that should reign supreme over all the other issues. Now, I understand when you have personalities involved, and at some point in time, they just have to suck it up and get over that.
Well, that's obviously true. And so it had David Johnson not left the party, you probably wouldn't be running today.
David Johnson is a primary motivating factor why I did run. I've known David like for 18 years, and when he was leaving the party, I called him that day. I said, "David, don't do this." And he was persuaded for an election that he was upset about Trump, basically, but it was an election that hadn't happened. We didn't even know if Trump was going to be the nominee, or certainly maybe not the president. And you just don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, and just up and leave. So David's just lost his way, and you know, he's been a decent guy, but he's lost his way.
Fair enough. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm sure probably district your voters in your district are probably a little more aware of who you are than maybe some of our average listeners, but maybe not. So I just want to give you a chance to just talk a little bit about yourself, your qualifications, background.
Well, thank you. I live in Emmitsburg, or just outside of Emmitsburg, with my wife of 33 years. Her name is Janice. We've been married for 33 years, and we have four adult children. I am president of a manufacturing business, and my Republican pedigree, so to speak, is for the past 6 years, I've been the chair of the Palo Alto County Republican Central Committee. I'm also the chairman of the 4th Congressional District Executive Committee. And this committee, it really assists the central committees for the other 39 counties that you know, we're kind of responsible for, to help coordinate, help them with fundraising and candidate surfacing issues, and those type of things. Other things, I guess, that you probably ought to know about me from that, and why I feel the Republican should vote for me in this primary, is that I do have real life experience, and I have solutions. And you know, I'm not a real young guy, so I've gained perspective over the years. I've had that opportunity to see what works and what doesn't. I've been an entrepreneur. I've had to meet a payroll, balance the budget, pitch a product, deal with government regulators, and at one time answer to an unreasonable boss. I've learned how to achieve
I find
goals with.
that I just sorry to interject. I find when you
That's
work
all
for
right.
yourself, the most unreasonable boss you have is when you're self-employed.
Oh, well, yeah, the pressure you put on yourself to succeed and do it. Now, that's true. You know, oh, it's Sunday. We ought to not be working today, you know. And what I've found that's really great, working for yourself, you can work half days. And it doesn't matter which 12 hours you work. And usually that stretches into more than 12. You
Very
know,
true.
and I've had the opportunity to meet people from different backgrounds and ideologies, and over time mold them into a team that will work together to achieve company objectives. And that is, when you get into politics, that's kind of right up my alley. And I've got the experience, drive, and resolve to see issues through. I want to make a difference in the lives of the district of District 1 constituents.
Great. So let's get into some policies, policy discussion here. education policy in particular is something I write a lot about. When you hear the phrase local control of education, what does that mean for you? And what should that look like, ideally?
Local is your local school board. I grew up on a farm and I attended a rural school. That school provided exceptional opportunity for me to learn and be part of a great community and family. And when I think of that, I think that our children deserve nothing less than an excellent education and a sense of belonging to their communities, so they can have boundless opportunities as well. The local control is where the rubber needs to meet the road at the local school board in the local community to make those decisions that are right for your local school district. We have a lot of top-down pressure that we get from the feds, from the state as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the local guys have to be able to be, they are the ones that are accountable to the voters, and they must be accountable to the community. So that is the best solution for that. We have formulation problems for the smaller rural schools. Without putting them in such financial straits, we need to do some reformulation of that valuation so that our rural schools can be competitive economically with the larger cities. And so that's an area that I have a great desire to work on. Mm-hmm. and promote common sense taxation policies, reduce unnecessary regulation. All those things can help us, but we have to do this in a way that we are not putting the financial burden on the property taxes.
Right. And I want to get to tax policy here in a little bit. Just directly regarding education policy, do you support the Common Core State Standards?
I do not.
Okay. And Next Generation Science Standards?
STEM? STEM's good.
Well, okay, not STEM. STEM's obviously broader than that. Next Generation Science Standards is the new science standards that the Iowa State Board of Education adopted to replace our previous science standards that, I'm personally against, but I want to hear what you think, and maybe you're not aware.
I have not seen those standards, so I probably better not comment.
Sure. Well, yeah, I don't want
to like them or not.
I certainly don't want you to take a policy position on something you're not aware of.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be right.
That's for sure.
Okay. School choice. Legislature, I thought perhaps maybe they were going to pass education savings accounts this year. It didn't happen. Yeah. Is that something that you support?
I support school choice. I support our public schools. I support our private and parochial schools. I support homeschoolers, and each of those have their own niche. Some are broader than others, but if parents decide that the best choice for their child is for homeschooling, then I support that. And we have to find a way to make the public schools be more efficient and successful as well.
Okay. Moving on to tax policy, since you kind of brought that up, they did pass a tax reform and some tax relief. Does that go? I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the plan that they just adopted, and obviously Governor Reynolds hasn't signed it yet.
Right.
I'm assuming she will. Does that go far enough, or what do you think the best tax reform, tax relief package would look like for Iowans?
Well, the best tax deal would be zero tax.
Okay. I agree. That's never going to happen, obviously.
Not going to happen. We have obligations that we have to meet. So
right. We're
going to have taxes. There are different formulations that you could use. Some guys talk about, well, let's just make it a sales tax. But Iowa's income tax is too high. It's too high for individuals,
mm-hmm.
and it's too high for corporations. What people don't realize a lot of times is that corporations, they really don't pay tax. Mm-hmm. Those taxes are passed through to people who buy the products. And so lowering the corporate tax does a couple things that helps everything. We are able to attract more business with lower corporate tax. We have to give them a reason to move to Iowa. I mean, Iowa is a great place to live, raise their family, and all of that. Mm-hmm. But to do business here, we need them to come. And so we can do commerce in Iowa. Mm-hmm. That also takes people. So we need to bring more people in, and we can do through that through economic development. Taxes is a tool for that. But at the end of the day, we also have to pay our bills.
Right.
So what I see has been a huge fall down is that the guys who do the formulation on this is how much we're going to get, and this is how much we can spend. We can't spend more than we make. We can't sit. But they've been off. And I hear, you know, guys say, well, 39 other states aren't getting the mark right. Well, that's their problem. Iowa needs to make theirs right.
Right.
So we need to have the right formulation, find out why aren't we hitting the target on this. And I would say, let's not spend 99%. Let's maybe 92% is where we ought to be. And then we can find out how did things shake out? Where are we at? We could use some of that money for a rainy day fund since we don't have one, or we could give that money back to the people's kind of a novel idea. It's their money anyway.
Right.
So that is, you know, so those are the kind of governing choices that have to be made. And honestly, probably a savings account's not a bad idea to start. Mm-hmm. And maybe the people would be willing to go with us for a year or two to do that before we, you know, they get it right. And if we can reduce taxes and give everyone their money back, the most efficient use of their money is what comes out of the individual's pocket.
Yeah. Well, you addressed the, you know, spending a little bit as far as mentioning the 99% spending limitation. And it seems like, you know, opponents to the tax reform and tax relief plan this year they've kept on saying, you know, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. The revenue estimating conference projections seems like they've constantly had to alter. They've been wrong. Do in your mindset, does Iowa have a revenue problem or do we have a spending problem?
We definitely have a spending problem.
Okay.
And we need to have real value for our money. That is, and the budget, you know, I'd be willing to sit down and go line by line by line to see, okay, what are we spending money for and why? And is this really necessary? And I'm not faulting anyone, but we have the needs and we have the wants.
Right.
And the needs are things that we have to do, and wants are things that would be nice. And so right now we need to take care of the needs. In addition, they're talking about eliminating backfill to communities. And what I would tell you, in Northwest Iowa, where District 1 is at, those five counties in the Northwest sector of the state, they need the backfill. Mm-hmm. They're not a large county. The state made a deal with them. They
right.
shook their hand and looked them in the eye, and they said, we're going to do this backfill. And now we can't say, no, we're going to yank that out from under you. You have to balance your budget. So you have to take it out of the general fund, and you're going to have to cut places you don't want to have to cut. You don't want to cut the city pool or the library or, you know, whatever the needs that you would have to cut to balance your budget. The backfill in that instance is necessary. Now, so there may be some of the big cities that really don't need the backfill, and that's a different discussion. Mm-hmm. But if they want to change not doing the backfill, they got to put everybody at the table and work their way through a renegotiation of how to do that. Part of that backfill, you know, I can lower my corporate tax to attract people here. Mm-hmm. Well, if we're not able to to do that, we need economic development in Northwest Iowa to make our cities grow. Otherwise, what we're going to have is we're going to look like South Dakota. We're going to have large cities on the periphery, and we're not going to have much in the middle. And Iowa traditionally has been a state of small towns. And that is one of the things that makes Iowa such a great place. And I would hate to see tax policy interfere with that.
Great. Thank you. Moving on to basically, they just passed last week, fetal heart, the Iowa legislature did, Iowa, the fetal heartbeat abortion ban that included some exceptions for rape, incest, and fetal abnormalities. Is that a bill that you would have voted in favor of or against?
I would have voted for that bill. I am passionately pro-life. This bill was a good step, maybe a good second step in the right direction. I remember Roe versus V. Wade, and at that time, we didn't have the science and technology advances that we have now. And they, you know, couldn't define if that baby is a person or not a person or whatever. But we know through scientific DNA testing now that at conception, that is a unique individual. Uh-huh. And, you know, their sex, their eye color, their hair color, everything is determined in that instant. And so they don't even have a heartbeat yet. So that is, you know, ultimate. I don't know how you get all the way to conception on the abortion side of that. Obviously, there are maybe a few carve outs, but yeah, I'd have voted for that bill in a heartbeat.
All right. Well, sure. Okay. Well, would you? I know there's some people that would say, okay, hey, we got this done. We're done. we're not gonna pass anything else. I just want to move on from the abortion issue. But would you support things like a personhood bill?
Oh yeah, I believe so.
Okay,
I believe so. I mean, I think that this wonderful legislation and hats off to the legislature. They got it right for doing this, and to the governor for signing it. We're going to have court challenges, I'm sure, that we have to wrangle through.
Right. Well, and you're never going to have Roe v. Wade struck down unless there's a challenge to a law.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, but a personhood, sure. Okay. I would be in support of that.
Okay. And I also want to ask, I know there were a lot of pro-lifers that were not happy about the exceptions addition, because I personally know some children conceived in rape. I mean, it's awful circumstance, obviously. But they say, hey, yeah. I'm worthy of protection too. But I know go ahead.
The baby, it's not the baby's fault.
Right, right.
If a woman becomes pregnant as a result of rape and incest, what a horrible thing.
It is, obviously.
And it's devastating. And I feel for that young woman, for the anguish that she goes through, I would say, look in your heart and use that for good. Put that baby up for adoption. It's not the baby's fault.
Right. So that kind of reminds me of another question I wanted to ask you, because it's something that State Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad talked about, babies having babies, during the House debate. Yeah. And how can Iowa, in your opinion, help support the choice of adoption?
Well, I don't think adoption should be so costly and so difficult. There has to obviously be screening that the adoptive parents are legitimate, so to speak. Mm-hmm. We have many, many families who are unable to conceive that would love to have one of those babies. So that is a that's another discussion. That's another podcast probably. But
that's so, yeah. I probably should do one on that. That'd be
probably not a bad idea. We need to make it efficient and not so cumbersome to adopt, and encourage that. You know, if you have a unwed a mother that obviously maybe the best thing she can do is put that baby up for adoption if she's unable to provide for it. And in a lot of ways, that helps both of them. That mm-hmm. gives the mother another chance to not be weighted down with the care of a child, mm-hmm. but the baby has life.
Yeah. Okay. Another thing I wanted to ask you, and then we want to wrap this up because we're past 20 okay. minutes already.
Oh, sorry.
Going on 25 minutes. No, it's fine. I wanted to, first of all, there's a lot of, I guess, growing pressure through sexual orientation and gender identity laws on people of faith to put them in positions where either I you know, provide a cake for a same-sex wedding, or, you know, I end up getting sued or have a complaint filed with the Iowa Commission on Civil Rights. How can Iowa protect, not, you know, make sure people aren't discriminated against, but yet protect religious liberty and conscience as well?
Well, I'm glad you asked the hard questions first. This is a conundrum. This goes back to the motive of the individuals. I have a live, let live a perspective on gay rights. You know, everybody has their own orientation, and we have guaranteed through our Constitution, they have the right to do that, right to religion. You have the right to whatever religion you want, or no religion.
Right.
We have people fought and died for that right. And the issues, you know, a lot of these that we hear in the news, they have made a Christian business owner a target. Mm-hmm. Where they are, you know, it's like entrapment almost, won't come in, and they would, you know, bake them a cake or arrange flowers or do something like that. They may have many choices where there are other florists or bakers that do that, but they'll single out the one that has, you know, a religious objection to that, and then make their case and drive them out of business and, you know, try and bankrupt them and, mm-hmm. And all of that. And, you know, so that kind of cuts both ways. It's, the party or the couple that's doing that are disingenuous, mm-hmm. in their own motives. You need to have the right to live your life, live in your beliefs, whether you're gay or not gay. And you might have religious people that are willing to bake that cake or do those flowers or have that. I mean, you know, it is their choice. So don't single out the guy that you want to hammer him to death and make him a national news media soundbite.
Right.
Look how backward he is and all of those type of things. We need some civility, something that we were struggling with in the first district, but we need civility, in our national platform as well. And how do we, you can't wave a wand to make that happen. That is a matter of conscience. And all I can say, what I thought is the best is it starts at home. You give proper, upbringing to your children to respect mm-hmm. others, respect their beliefs. And it makes a better world.
Well, there is legislation. Actually, there was legislation, unfortunately, stalled out in the Iowa Senate, Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It didn't give it didn't give new rights. It just outlined a potential defense for somebody who a complaint is filed, and there's a 3-tier process to determine whether or not the government had, you know, the right to, you know, I guess use its course of power in that instance.
Sure. And I would say this is an issue that the government really shouldn't be involved in. It's an issue of the heart, and you know, laws are necessary, but you can't legislate beliefs.
Well, true. Well, just one last question, and then I'll let you go. And I thank you for your time. There may have been something that we haven't touched on you wanted to address with our listeners. Also, just kind of make your pitch. Why should, you know, our listeners, especially the ones who live in your Senate district, who can't actually vote for you over the other two gentlemen running for the Republican nomination? And where can people learn more about your campaign?
Okay, well, let's do that first. I have a website. It's wolfforiowasenate.com. I have an email address, which is wolfforiowasenate@gmail.com. My phone number is 712-298-0926. Now, I won't promise you that I'll answer the phone, but if you leave me a message, I certainly will return your call. I want them to know that a couple things. I would respectfully ask for your vote on the primary on June 5th. And if I'm elected as your senator in the first district, I will work extremely hard for you to put the interest of those constituents in front. I will look at legislation as it comes through in the prism of how it affects people in the first district. Mm-hmm. I'll listen to the people. That's something that we kind of miss. The constituents in the end are the boss. That's who I would answer to. I wouldn't be answering to anybody else. I'd answer to them, and would be accessible to them. Things that we didn't talk about, and real quickly, I'll say, you know, I'm a rock solid conservative. I'm pro-life, of course. I'm a Second Amendment supporter. And I believe God is a very important part of our life, and that our country was founded on Judeo-Christian values. All of these are the things that make America exceptional. And we need to build on those and build on those in the Iowa legislature rather than discount them and sidestep them. We need to stand up and have a spine and be proud for that. I thank you for the opportunity. I know things have run a little long here. I could talk to you for another hour, but maybe we can do that another time. That's gracious of you to bring me on your podcast. And I would like the people of the first district know that I have your back. I am the best choice for the first district to have dignity, civility, and I work very hard for you to bring that into reality. Thanks so much, and I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much, and take care, and good luck June 5th. And if you happen to win the nomination, we'll look to have you back on before the general election.
I look forward to it.
All right, hey, take care.
You take care now. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Again, that's caffeinatedthoughts.com, or just Google Caffeinated Thoughts and we'll show up at the top of your search screen. Please be sure to also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or sign up for our email updates right on the website. That way you don't miss a single update from us. Hey, this is Shane Vanderhart. Until next time, my friends, take care.